dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are a few people whose intelligence I've admired more, as I think most of our countrymen and women have over the years, than that of our first guest. He is Ambassador John Bolton. He has served in a number of capacities in the United States government with great distinction, including as our ambassador to the United Nations. He is the author of Surrender is Not an Option, simply countless op-eds, columns, and other contributions to the public debate about all of the national security issues of our time, and a great friend and guest. We're always delighted to have him with us. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back.
Glad to be with you.
So much to talk about, so little time. Let me throw a couple of them at you. Russia, you have been very, very concerned, as I think the rest of us have been, about what Vladimir Putin is up to, not least his influence operations, which are getting an awful lot of partisan press, especially. Give us quickly, if you would, sir, your thoughts on this meeting that the president had last week with Putin and what we've been learning since.
Well, I thought it was extremely important that President Trump do exactly what he did, which is put to Putin right at the beginning of the meeting and for apparently as long as 40 minutes in a number of different aspects of the conversation, why he was unhappy with Russian efforts to meddle in our elections. And I thought that kind of straightforward talk by the president should have made it pretty clear to Putin how strongly we felt about it. But I thought maybe the most important lesson to come out of it for the president, for Secretary of State Tillerson, who was in the meeting, was to watch completely predictably Vladimir Putin deny to their faces that Russia had tried to do anything to undercut Americans' faith in their democratic institutions, because that was the proof positive about how this Russian government performs in international affairs. It will say or do whatever it thinks necessary, whether it is related to the truth or just happens to be coincidentally related to the truth to advance their interest. And therefore, whatever agreement you make with Russia, whether it's a ceasefire in southwest Syria, an arms control agreement, dealing with them on the Iran nuclear weapons program, talking about their intervention in Ukraine, whatever it is, what Russia says cannot be relied upon. Because I think once you reach that understanding, negotiating with the Russians becomes a lot more realistic. And I think after 8 years of Obama, we desperately need that.
Do you agree with me, Mr. Ambassador, that as we're hearing a lot of talk in connection with the Donald Trump Jr. meeting with a Russian attorney, that this opens the door to, in fact, makes absolutely obligatory an investigation into the sorts of collusion that others were having with the Russians? We certainly have evidence of Hillary Clinton and, for that matter, Barack Obama. Should those be part of the investigations underway now?
Well, I think either part of the investigation or perhaps we need separate ones, because I think in many respects, this really requires something that gives appropriate prominence to the various things that are being alleged here. I mean, I just think that the Clinton campaign, the abuses of the Obama administration in trying to affect the election are equally serious from the perspective of preserving our constitutional process. I mean, we still don't know the extent to which the Obama administration was acting in impermissible ways. But certainly one thing, their supporters in the Democratic Party have yet to explain, which is, if this Russian hacking of our election were as serious as they say, why in God's name didn't Obama do anything about it? This to me is an existential threat to the United States. We are a country founded on an idea about human freedom, reflected in our governmental processes and embodied in the Constitution. And I do think that there's still a lot we don't know about what the Russians did, but I think their fundamental premise is to undermine the faith in our institutions. They're doing it in other countries as well, because then it doesn't matter ultimately what candidate wins. It means our system is being undermined. So if it's that serious, what was Barack Obama doing other than watching the paint dry on his office walls?
Let me ask you, you mentioned Syria and the so-called ceasefire coming out of the conversations with Putin last week. One of the other things that's playing out in Syria as well as in Iraq, of course, is what we're being told is the defeat at long last of the Islamic State. Knowing what you do about the ideology that is animating this outfit, do you believe that we're actually at the point where we are seeing that ideology defeated as well as, for that matter, one of its manifestations in this group, the Islamic State?
No, I still don't think that we're addressing the ideology adequately. I think from both press reports and what I pick up in conversations with knowledgeable people, it's almost certain that the Islamic State has already exfiltrated substantial numbers of its leaders to somewhere else. Libya, Yemen, there are a lot of possibilities. Afghanistan, I mean, they could have left for a lot of different places to reestablish a new caliphate. And those who remain behind in Mosul, where there's still some holding out, in Raqqa, the capital, are ready to get their martyrdom, which they richly deserve, and the sooner the better. But it's not going to end the ISIS threat. And in fact, I think Obama's slow roll strategy of dealing with the ISIS caliphate in Syria and Iraq has permitted ISIS the luxury of being able to regroup elsewhere. And I think the president has a fundamentally different view of the conflict with radical Islamic terrorism. I just don't think his government has come along with him yet. And I think it's a problem that we will see in a number of different areas, most acutely in this one, that the permanent government is not yet under control.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you about not just the permanent government. That's bad enough, most especially the Foreign Service part of it. But even his cabinet officer over there, Rex Tillerson, on the issue of a country that has been very much at the forefront of promoting this, well, Andy McCarthy calls it Sharia supremacist ideology, namely Qatar. You have this sort of spectacle of the president saying it's a good thing that they drive out, effectively, Qatar, if it won't drive out the Muslim Brotherhood and Al Jazeera and so on the one hand. And you have Rex Tillerson not only saying, hey, everything's just hunky-dory with the Qatar, but we're actually now party to a memorandum of understanding about how we're going to join forces with them in countering terrorism. What do you make of this based on particularly your experience in the building?
Well, it's anytime you get a split between the White House and the State Department or any major cabinet to defend the intelligence community, our foreign adversaries take advantage of it. I actually think what the president did in Riyadh and the creation of the Center Against Extremism gave us an enormous opportunity to try and dry up terrorist financing from whatever source it comes from. And, you know, you can point a lot of fingers on this score because the terrorists and their different manifestations get it from a lot of different places. Qatar has one significant point in its favor when it says, you know, you accuse us of giving to the Muslim Brotherhood. It's true, we don't, in Qatar, the Muslim Brotherhood's not declared as a foreign terrorist organization. But, you know, the United States hasn't declared it to be a terrorist organization yet either. So, to me, this is how you take this mess in the Gulf, which I do think we need to clear up. We need a united anti-Iran front, and Qatar needs to come closer to its friends on the peninsula and us and Israel on that point. But in the meantime, let's help Qatar along here. Why doesn't the United States get on with the business of declaring the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization? And that then gives Qatar the excuse to go ahead and do it, too, so we can cut off everybody's funding for them, whether it's in Egypt or the United States or anywhere in the world.
Great idea. Mr. Ambassador, we hope from your lips to God's ears, as they say. We thank you for spending some time sharing with our audience's ears these important insights, and I know you'll come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, sir, stay very well. Dinah West joins us next. We'll talk about Skolkovo and collusion that really is treasonous. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.